This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Mother, Daughter, Sister is a film that gives voice to Kachin and Rohingya women calling for an end to the atrocity of using rape as a weapon of war. And it brings to light women's activists' efforts to enact justice for Burma's crimes. Set to be screened at this year's Freedom Film Festival, I find out more about the film from associate producer and second camera, Rarish Michael Gilzen. Welcome, Michael. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me here.
My pleasure. So I was reading that you were with the UN Human Rights Council back in 2006 before you became an attorney, and that you became involved in human rights advocacy in Burma back in 2016. I mean, tell me about that. What was that journey like?
So I was, Burma was also on my radar basically since Do Aung San Suu Kyi received the Nobel Prize. I was sort of on the outside for a couple decades looking in. And then in 2016, when President Obama lifted the sanctions on Burma, mm-hmm. I felt that it was a good time for me to sort of jump in the fray. And I went in for the first time and, you know, immediately fell in love with the country and with the people. But around that time, end of 2016, was when the first wave of violence against the Rohingya mm-hmm. that eventually led to the exodus of between 700,000 and a million people mm-hmm. Happened. And while I knew about them based on, you know, stories in the news and also the violence in 2012, I was not very familiar with the Rohingya, not as much as I was with other ethnicities in Burma.
Okay.
And I just couldn't reconcile this sort of happy feeling I had in the rest of the country with what was happening in the Northwest.
Right.
And so I wanted to investigate. It was also very hard at the time to get any reliable information. So I wanted to investigate on my own and see for myself. And so I took a trip to Rakhine State. And while in Rakhine State, I was still in contact with some UN people, including the then coordinator for Rakhine State, Chris okay. Carter. Mm-hmm. I went to visit Rohingya villages around Sitwe and around Miao. And I took a personal initiative to visit Rohingya IDP camp.
Okay.
There's still to this day about 100, I want to say 120, 130,000 Rohingyas who are living in refugee camps inside Rakhine State. Mm-hmm. And, you know, visiting the camp was sort of an eye-opening experience for me.
I can imagine, yeah.
And after that, I just spent a lot of time on my own learning about the history of Rakhine and, you know, the history of the different ethnicities living there. With a focus on the Rohingya.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you also co-produced another film called Sitwe, also in an effort to spread awareness on the plight of the Rohingya refugees. Am I correct?
Yes, actually. So Sitwe was how I met our amazing director, Jeannie Halsey. Mm-hmm. It was a co-partnership with the NGO Smile Foundation. It's a Myanmar-based interfaith youth education NGO. So the goal of Sitwe was to open a dialogue. It's a movie that works great in and of itself, mm-hmm. but it's really meant to open a dialogue for youth of different faiths in Myanmar mm-hmm. Who are usually not privy to each other's struggles and to each other's perspective. And so Sitwe is a movie that is split equally mm-hmm. between 15-year-old Rohingya refugee who lives in an IDP camp in Sitwe,
okay.
and a 15-year-old Rakhine boy who also lives in an IDP in Sitwe. So at the time, there was 130,000 Rohingya that I mentioned. There was also about 30,000 Rakhine who lived in refugee camps as a result of the inter-ethnic violence that
yeah.
happened in 2012. And so Sitwe is really giving a voice to these children to speak about their experience and to then show others in Myanmar and abroad how really similar they are and how, you know, all these concepts that we put as, you know, race, religion
yeah.
it's really just a human human concept that we put on top of the actual human experience. Mm-hmm. And so Sitwe, I felt, was a very balanced movie. Now, most of the filming happened before the wave of violence at the end of 2016. Mm-hmm. However, the movie was still in production at the time. And so Jeannie felt very strongly that we had to address that. So at the tail end of Sitwe, you have footage from Bangladesh. And okay. You have also footage from Rakhine, where you see how they the army destroy some houses. And there's a very strong, you know, witness statement by a young girl that was unfortunately raped. And Sitwe was supposed to premiere at the Yangon Human Rights Film Festival. Mm-hmm. 2 or 3 days before the premiere, we received a call from the Ministry of Communications that the premiere would not go forward. It was the only movie that was ever banned from the Yangon Human Rights Film Festival, which festival, by the way, no longer runs. No. And unfortunately, our good friend who runs it is currently in jail in Myanmar for expressing his views on Facebook.
And how long has he been in jail already?
I think he's going on a year now. There's a few draconian anti-freedom of speech laws, censorship laws in Myanmar.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And allowing essentially anyone to be put in jail with no bail on a defamation charge. So he's still awaiting trial. Similar to what happened to many, many journalists over the past few years.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about mother, daughter, and sister. I mean, Sitwe was about children, essentially, right? But this is about women. Why did you want this story to be told, you know, the focus on being on women?
So I still remember when we were discussing this with Jeannie. It was about November of 2017. We were still trying to grapple with what was happening. Mm-hmm. What was happening starting in August of 2017, the mass exodus. We were already getting numerous reports of rapes having been committed, using rape and sexual violence as a weapon of war. In a way, we're not surprised. We're not surprised because we had already seen that taking place a year earlier. Mm-hmm. But going much further back, unfortunately, the Tamado, the Myanmar military, has a long history of using violence against ethnic women in order to gain a military advantage. It's all part of their four cuts counterinsurgency strategy. Mm-hmm. It's cutting the community from the ethnic armies and ethnic fighters. And so what the problem is that there's such an attitude towards the Rohingya that even when these women testify about what happened to them, they are not believed simply because they are Rohingya. And so what we wanted to do was to make a parallel between the experience of the Rohingya women and women from other ethnic groups in Myanmar who also suffered sexual violence at the hands of the military. And we're hoping that by showing the parallels between women who live, you know, 1,000 miles apart, different communities, have no access to each other, don't speak each other's language. Mm-hmm. We were hoping that even within Myanmar, it would show that what these women are saying is true.
Because it's a pattern, isn't it?
It's a pattern, exactly. So that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to show that pattern of violence against women across Myanmar.
Mm-hmm. And essentially how it's being used as a weapon.
Absolutely.
Right. This film particularly revolves around the stories of four women. Why were these four women the ones that whose stories that you wanted to tell?
That's really sort of genius of how that happened. I think that when you look at a movie now, it looks like a very coherent piece. Having been part of the filming and the production team, I can tell you there was many moments when, you know, we thought this was not going to work. We had very limited funding. We were in places where our welcome was very short-lived. Mm-hmm. And we sort of went down many different paths. We also did a filming session in Karen State with another ethnic group that eventually we did not even put in the film. But these women, Dilkayas, Shamima, and the two Kachin teachers that were murdered, they sort of emerge as our protagonists as we were filming.
Sure.
Now, in terms of the Kachin ladies, of course, they had already been in the news, and we had great support from Kachin Women's Organization. So we knew that we wanted to focus on them, right?
Right.
In terms of the camps in Bangladesh, Shamima was really sort of a diamond in the dirt. So Shamima, how we met her was that through a local organization that Jeannie approached, we found out that there are Rohingya women mm-hmm. who have received a trauma counseling training and who then give back to their community to help women who have been victim of this sexual violence by the Burmese army. And
right.
so initially we focus on three victims, one of them being Dilkayas, who's another one of our protagonists.
Yeah.
And Shamima helped us talking with Dilkayas, and you can see in the movie how she does a counseling session with her. But then we realize that Shamima is a very special human being. She's very smart. She is one of the extremely few Rohingya women that were able to attend university. Unfortunately, her dreams of becoming a teacher were shattered in 2012 when, due to communal violence, Sidwe University was closed to all Rohingya. So she was never able to finish her degree. But still, she is a very persistent person. And so in the camps, she saw that she could do more than your average refugee. And so that's when she started working to help other victims. And so the focus started to shift on her. And especially when we returned to Bangladesh to do more filming. Mm-hmm. By that time, Shamima had received a training with Internews to provide intra-camp stories and small testimonies and interviewing people. And she's still doing that. I actually met with her recently in March to screen the movie for her.
Okay.
So Shamima just has this energy about her. And, you know, she has this optimism about her. And what we also liked was not just to portray these women as victims, mm-hmm. but also to show the tremendous trauma that they suffered, mm-hmm. but also to show what they're doing to go beyond that.
Okay.
What they're doing to rewrite the narrative. Mm-hmm. And she's a great example of that.
Okay, that's wonderful. We're running out of time, I'm afraid. But, you know, what do you hope that this documentary will achieve? Because you are taking this and screening it many different places, right? What are you hoping it will achieve?
Right, we've screened it across numerous countries. We screened all over the U.S. as well. We want to bring awareness to what happened, of course, to both the Rohingya and the Kachin.
Mm-hmm.
What is still happening to them today? Because obviously none of these issues are resolved. The military is still fighting in Kachin State. There's about 500,000 Rohingya left in Rakhine State out of an estimated population of 1.2 million. Mm. The UN has recently described them as at a very high risk of genocide. So we don't want the world to close their eyes on this.
Mm-hmm.
But we also want to show that even though they were victims, that they still were able to rise sort of above their condition. And as you can see, the families of the two slain teachers in Kachin State, they banded together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now they're demanding justice from the government.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that's very powerful. Inside of Burma, we will do our first screening in 2 months. What we would like to achieve inside of Burma is to show the average Burmese person that, you know, Rohingyas are also human beings, just like them, and to show them that at the end of the day, they are all victims of this violence. Because even if you are Burmese and at the moment you're not experiencing violence, but if your sons and brothers are enlisted in the army and end up engaging in such horrific acts, that ends up scarring everyone. And I strongly believe that without support from the majority, it's really hard to get rights for the minority. And the first step in that is to really push for the inclusion of the Rohingya within Myanmar, mm-hmm. And not consider them as they are currently considered as outsiders who have no right to be in the country. So hopefully we can achieve that in a future in Myanmar as well.
Okay, all right. And the film is set to be screened this Saturday, the 28th of September, as part of the Freedom Film Festival, which is currently running, that's happening over at PJ Live Arts and the school at Jaya One. I do understand that viewer discretion is advised for this film.
Yes, that is correct. Well, the events that are described are very traumatic. Mm-hmm. We also use footage from when the slain teachers were found. So that footage can be a little bit tough for some people to watch.
Okay. All right. So, but anyway, that is screening this Saturday again at 1 p.m. And entry to all events is strictly via a pass. And for more information, you can head to freedomfilm.my or head to their Facebook page at facebook.com/freedomfilmfest. And Michael, if you'd like to find out more about the film, I mean, is there anywhere that we can go to get more information, or is it available online, the film?
At the moment, we have a distribution deal, so it is available online. For more information, the easiest way to go is go on Facebook. Go to Kirana Productions, and from that page, you will find information about the movie.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Rarish Michael Gilzan. He's the associate producer and second camera for the film Mother, Daughter, Sister, which will be screened at this weekend's Freedom Film Festival. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.